The Daily Connect Podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Connect Podcast for Monday, the 6th of August, 2018. A very good day to you. Hope you've had a good one. This is the Daily Connect Podcast, your chance to catch up with what's happened on today's show. And on the programme today, we found out about a new book in the RNIB Talking Books Library that will be of particular interest to blind and partially sighted people. It's called The Rules of Seeing and is written by Joe Heap and follows Nova, who is blind since birth but regains her sight later in life. But not all goes to plan. Also, we hear from our book group on the topic, and you're welcome to share your thoughts as well. Also, we meet community facilitator Richard Shuker, who tells us about a new smart speaker Facebook group that he's set up to allow all of us to share our thoughts and suggestions on how best to use the gadget. Also, we talk to Lynn about her new guide dog with a difference, and Kirsty James from Wales talks about how she sees with eye conditions Stargardt's and Charles Bonnet syndrome. That's coming up.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
But first, you might have heard in the news last week that shared space schemes are to be halted in the UK following a government announcement by the Transport Minister, Nusrat Ghani. It was decided that the schemes don't work for blind and partially sighted people, something we've only tried to say for many years. But it is good news for the many campaigners who have been fighting to stop the rollout of such plans for many years. And one of those campaigners is Claire from Cirencester, who called in this morning.
Oh, hi there, Stephen.
Listen, great to have you on the show. Thank you for calling in. I know that you're a first-time listener, I believe.
That's right, yes. I heard from Sarah Gayton, who works for the National Federation for the Blind, that she was going to be on the radio. So I tuned in and I thought, why am I still listening to Radio 4? So that was good.
So we've switched you over. Fantastic.
Well, certainly. Very interesting.
Well, yeah. That's it, and this is what it's all about. It's about issues that are pertinent to us as blind people. And, you know, if this show can help in any way to raise awareness of issues and get people talking, then yeah. That's what it's all about. You're right, Sarah was on last week, and she was talking about shared spaces. And you actually emailed in straight after because you were you're going through the same situation regarding shared spaces in Cirencester, is that right?
Absolutely. Well, Cirencester is a lovely market town. As you probably know, Roman origins, capital of the Cotswolds and so on. But it's become a no-go area, at least the marketplace, which is the main sort of attractive area of the middle of Cirencester for many blind, partially sighted, sensory impaired people, as well as mums with prams, wheelchair users, because it's become a bit of a free-for-all. What's quite difficult is that the planning people and the town council won't call it shared space, but in fact it is, because you've got that takeaway of the delineation between the pavement and the road. So you've got areas where there are no curbs at all, and people and traffic in the same area, which is really frightening if you're a partially sighted person like me with a guide dog.
I mean, this is the interesting thing. You know, we've heard this a lot from different councils up and down the country where they don't call it a shared space, but what else do you call it is my question.
Well, that's right. And the intention apparently was to make it less traffic going through, better traffic flow. And the idea was for motorists to kind of slow down and look out for pedestrians. Now, I used to be a motorist not very long ago, and I also used to cycle. And the effect is actually that motorists get very irritated and confused.
That's interesting. Really, you had some. You obviously had full vision at one time.
Oh yeah, I lost my sight, part of my sight, quite suddenly in 2010. I've got bilateral optic atrophy, it's called, which means the nerves don't work properly, so, you know, you see much less. But I'm one of the lucky ones because I'm not blind, and I get around with a brilliant guide dog. But I still find it very hazardous now getting around Cirencester.
You can see it from both sides then, because you can see
exactly
from the driver's point of view as well. Interesting. So as a driver, even the shared space scheme would irritate you as a driver.
Well, I've gone through the centre with my sister several times. She's driving, and she's saying to me, Claire, I don't know what's going on, and this is dangerous. So for any motorist, it is actually not really improving the situation, and I think at least they ought to put up signage to say you are now entering a shared space zone.
Watch out
for pedestrians. Things like courtesy crossings are, for me, a nightmare, because even though I've got a guide dog, people don't get it. They're kind of beckoning me across from behind the wheel of the car. I don't see that at all. So it's a kind of mind game. So, where before we had pelican crossings and so on, it was so much safer, or audible beepers.
Yeah, that's right, because you have different cross points, whereas those are taken away, essentially, because of the shared
space. That's right.
So, you know, in Cirencester this has happened. Of course, you, I imagine, just going by what you're saying, you'll be happy at the news that the government has halted any further expansion of these schemes, even currently ones in progress, or even designed ones are now on halt. They've been halted completely.
That's right.
But that doesn't change Cirencester, does it? Because it's
well,
it's
the
done.
Thing is that the work on many towns was completed very quickly. And despite the many meetings we've had with town councillors, etc., all the suggestions that we've made, none of them have been taken up. So what's sad is for us, for towns that are established with this new design, we are stuck with it. And Cirencester won a civic award for best design town, or I can't remember the exact wording. That was about 2 weeks ago. So they are patting themselves on the back for, you know, beautiful design, lovely, great for tourists. Actually, it's not great for tourists either, because they also trip up on these low curbs, etc. So I think, you know, they're sort of thinking they're brilliant, and aesthetically it may be, but if you're a disabled person, it's a bit of a nightmare.
Claire, thank you for coming on and sharing your views. I appreciate it. And thank you for making the switch to RNIB Connect Radio. I hope you continue to enjoy it.
Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thanks for calling in.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. That was Claire calling in this morning to the Daily Connect. And if you want to get involved in the show, you can. You can email at any time, radio@rnib.org.uk. You can also call me in the studio, 10 till 12. The number is 0345 602 0025. Now we move on to Pause for Thought, our weekly look at the relationship between a guide dog owner and his or her dog. Well, when her fifth guide dog from the charity died suddenly, Lynn faced a difficult decision. Wait for months for a new dog, or try and train one herself. Lucy became her first self-trained dog, but as you might imagine, it wasn't all plain sailing.
My name's Lynn Holdsworth, and I've got with me Lucy, my Labrador, who's an owner-trained guide dog. I had quite a few dogs from Guide Dogs UK. I think I had five dogs. My last one sadly died very suddenly when she was six, and I urgently needed another dog. So I was living and working in London. I was going to college. I had a really busy social life, and I really could not do without a dog. So I spoke to Guide Dogs the day after she died, and they told me that it was likely to be at least a year before they could give me another dog. I was gutted about that, and then about 6 weeks later, I was walking along the platform on Liverpool Street and I almost fell under a tube train. So I kind of decided at that point, I really need a dog, even if it's a terrible dog. I just need a dog to keep me away from the edge of these trains. I'm really frightened here. So I started looking around the rescue centres. If something's too good to be true, it usually is. So I found this Labrador in a little rescue centre in Northwest London, and I decided to take her home and train her. She really was a problem dog. So the first time I took her to work, she ate through the boss's telephone and network cable. A few days later, she actually peed in her own ear at a meeting. And I don't know how a dog can do that, but she did it. So this was the nightmare dog from hell. It really was. But do you know, at that point, I was splitting up with my husband. I was going to be homeless because I couldn't afford to keep the house on by myself. I think I was losing my job. Everything seemed to be going wrong, and I was determined this project was going to work for me. So I stuck all the bad stuff. I'm very arrogant. Look, I thought to myself, I've had five guide dogs before. I can do this. I can train the badness out of this dog. So the first few days were just really familiarising her with the lead, taking her on the tube, and just trotting around, letting her get to know the area. Then on about day five, I decided to put a harness on her, and I thought, this is going to be such a disaster. So I had a harness that I bought from the internet, and I took her from my street, which I knew really well. So when I knew we were coming up to a lamppost, I purposely let her slam me into it, and I let out a big scream, ow, and jumped right back. And you know, ever since then, she's been really cautious. Actually, the guiding wasn't the hard bit at all, apart from steps. For some reason, she would put her paws on a bottom step, but she would not stop for the top step. She used to barrel down the steps. That went on for about 6 months. So that one was quite difficult. After I felt like Lucy had reached a reasonable standard, I contacted guide dogs because I was under the impression that all I had to do was train her up and they would certify her, because that's what used to happen. Well, I think they got quite upset. So they've refused to certify her, and they've refused to give me the public access standards that they work to. There's pros and cons to having an owner-trained guide dog. So some of the cons would be that it does cost a fortune. I cannot take her on a plane because there's a bit of a grey area legally around where non-certified service dogs can travel. So I can take her everywhere else legally, so she comes to public places with me. Everything's good in that respect. The pros, just the pride, the buzz of walking down the street with a dog that you've trained. And she just does it beautifully, and I am so proud of where we've come from and where we've got to. She's a brilliant little dog. I probably wouldn't have gone down this road if there hadn't been such a waiting list. I've had 5 good to excellent dogs from Guide Dogs UK, and I totally support the work that they're doing. But I really couldn't do without a dog. I don't feel I had a choice here. I would really recommend that for people who haven't had a guide dog from a school, I probably wouldn't do it. You really need to know what to expect from a dog before you own a train. But I think if you know what to expect, you've got the confidence, the time, the money, and a lot of patience, there's no reason why you can't do it. Caveat here, I definitely picked the wrong dog and I would not make that mistake again. Not that I think she's the wrong dog now, she's just perfect. But with Lucy, I would say it took me about 2.5 years, which is a very long time. You should see her now. She's gentle, she's lovely, she's a good little guide dog. She's really everything I want a guide dog to be.
Quite an incredible story when you think about it. Lynn Holdsworth's story does not end there, though. And if you listen into the podcast on Wednesday, you will hear part 2 of the conversation. And not only that, but get an update on where Lynn is today with her self-trained guide dog. Now time, though, to check in with the hardy team of R&IB community facilitators who work around the UK, empowering and encouraging us as blind and partially sighted people to start our own local groups or run events. Well, Richard Shuker is the community facilitator for the South West of England and joined me on the podcast to tell me what he's been up to.
Good morning, Stephen.
Now, the reason I wanted to get you on, Richard, is because you've kind of, trying to fill a gap in the market a little bit and offer support to people out there who've got these lovely smart speakers like Amazon Echoes or Google Homes, whatever. Getting the most out of them is the key. And you decided, well, do you know what? No one else has set up a group on Facebook, so I will.
That's right, Stephen. That's right. Just after Christmas, I was looking around for some support, being visually impaired myself, having bought the Echo, and there was none. Trolled the highways and byways and the digital platforms, didn't find a thing. So I thought, what the heck, I'll set one up. And was inundated with people wanting to join it.
So including me.
Including yourself.
Yes, I was one of them, because, you know, this is one of those things. I was, because I love this idea of, especially because, and I know that we never want to, at R&IB Connect, set up blind clubs. That's not what this is all about. It's the exact opposite of that, actually, isn't it? But the fact is that, you know, there is something about having that assistance and help from other people who are in the same position as you that does make all the difference.
Yes, there is. It just means that we can access the big various services that it offers and find out what different skills are out there that might be pertaining to somebody with sight loss and help them to progress and move forward with the product.
So you set up the Facebook group. You've had lots of people getting involved. What's the Facebook group called for those who want to join?
Yeah, it's called Amazon Echo and Dot Skills for people who are visually impaired and partially sighted.
That's snappy.
That's the full title. I wanted to encapsulate everything I could think of at the time.
But, well, it does, certainly, for sure. And, you know, and that's the thing, if people want to, and we're going to share it on the RNIB Connect Radio Facebook page and all of that, so people want to find it, you know, just search for us and you can connect to it. You have to join the group, though, don't you? It's not an open group.
It's not. I was asked that question yesterday and I couldn't give a good answer, so I think I'm going to recategorise it as open, because I don't know why it's closed. Just that's the standard default. I never thought about it until somebody asked me yesterday. So I'm going to put it to an open setting and then anyone can join.
And that's the whole thing. It's just sharing ideas. And that's what these Facebook groups are really all about. But, you know, I just wanted to highlight it today on the show because I think it's a great thing you've done with it. It's such a simple thing in some ways. But if nobody does it, then, of course, it'll never exist. But interestingly, though, Richard, while I've got you, you're a community facilitator for RNIB as well. How are you enjoying that job? You're in the Southwest.
I'm in the Southwest. It's a fantastic role. We've just got another major event coming up this Wednesday at Ford Masters in Newquay, where we're promoting sight loss within the surfing community. And so it's a four-day event we're going to be attending and helping to promote sight loss and sight loss prevention within the surfing and Cornish community in general.
Well, that sounds fantastic. So where is that happening again?
That's in Newquay. It's from the 8th, Wednesday the 8th of August to Saturday the 11th of August. At Newquay, it's called Boardmasters. It's the equivalent of the World Cup for the surfing community. About 1 million people descend upon Newquay for surfing.
Oh, sounds fantastic. Well, a beautiful part of the world as well.
Absolutely.
Richard, thank you so much. I know you're on your holiday at the moment. Very, very kindly come on to tell us about the Facebook group. And if it's an open group, then anyone can join, of course. But just to make people aware of it is what's all important here.
Fantastic. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for all your support.
No problem, Richard. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
This is the Daily Connect podcast. Now time to tell you about our How I See campaign. If you want to follow online, you can do hashtag How I See. It's a really innovative way of helping all of us better understand vision loss. Well, lots of you have been sharing your stories on YouTube, Facebook, and of course Twitter, and right here on RNIB Connect Radio. Let's now hear from Kirsty James from Wales, who told us about how she sees. Kirsty has Stargardt's disease and Charles Bonnet syndrome.
I was in year 9 of high school, and I remember when I first started to notice my sight going, I went back to start a new term, and then I was sat in registration. And I was looking at the board, and it was in green pen, and I was thinking, I can't see it. And I thought, well, it must be just because it's in green. So I just sort of like blagged my way and wrote the timetable. Obviously, later realised that you can't just make up a timetable because you'll end up in the wrong classes. And that is when I was diagnosed with Stargardt's disease. Especially the way that it was delivered to me as well. You know, you're going to go blind. That's pretty hard hitting at any age that you're at, but not made aware that being registered blind doesn't mean completely blind. It wasn't explained well until a couple of years ago. You know, I really thought I was going to go completely blind because of the way that the diagnosis was delivered to me. I remember when I got diagnosed, this sudden feeling of a black brick just hit me. And that feeling didn't go for many years. That heaviness of the sight loss, I think. That's, even though it was good things and positive things were happening in my life, I was in complete denial. And I remember this one particular day, I looked out of the window and I lived opposite a church and I could no longer see the door or anything of the church. It just sort of disappeared. It was like a big blurry grey circle. And I thought, oops. I remember that horrible feeling of just devastation. And it was just when I've lost my sight. And something just said to me there and then, got to deal with it now. Can't keep running away in denial. I'm actually registered blind. And that was the first moment. So it took until 2012 from 2003 for me to actually wake up and go, for this to happen, for me to say, wow, I actually have lost my sight. And I just remember looking out of the window, just being completely devastated at that point. Before then, I wasn't using a cane. I didn't use magnification. you know, I was pretty independent. I was very independent. I was a free spirit. I did what I wanted to do. And all of a sudden, I couldn't leave the house on my own. I couldn't make a cup of tea. I couldn't cook. Cooking was a massive passion of mine. I couldn't read music anymore. All these huge things I had to, like, suddenly changed overnight. And then I just remembered thinking, like, I have got to deal with this. And as much as it was like a really dark hole, it was actually the beginning of me moving forward in some crazy way. Yeah, Charles-Bonnet syndrome is something that happens with, is common with different eye conditions, that when there's a deterioration in vision, it can cause hallucinations because the brain's activity gets overexcited and puts different images there, whether it's, you know, nice things like flowers or horrible goblins. It's just different from various person to person. Mine are when the lights are low, like all different colors come in and it's like very pixelated, which sounds lovely, but it's quite an inconvenience when you're watching TV. You just want to watch TV. Things that are out of place. So say if you're living in some, you went to a house and they had a really random object that shouldn't be in there. For argument's sake, let's just say a lawnmower. My brain wouldn't be able to see there's a lawnmower because I've got no central vision. So it would try everything to put an image there, what would be in context. But because it's out of context, I would then hallucinate because it can't work out what it is. That's the best way I sort of describe it. It took a long time for me to actually talk about it. When I started to notice, I was a bit scared because I was thinking, am I losing my mind? And I stayed silent for a long time. I can't really think how long. But Tom, my now husband, was the first person I actually asked. I said, why? I looked out the window and I thought, I lived in a narrow street. It was full of lorries. And I said, why are there loads of lorries down here? It's a small street. And he's like, Kirsty, there's nothing there. And that's when I really started to think, oh, that's a bit weird. I thought I'd better talk about this. And I just started little bits to open up to Tom. Tom was completely unaware of the things I was sharing with him because I'd never shared that with anybody. And it was starting to feel like a huge relief. For the first time in many years, I was talking about how I actually felt with my sight loss. Just talk about it. Just talk. And then it gets easier because a lot of people stay silent. And that's what the terrifying part is.
Quite an honest account there of what life is like for Kirsty. Thank you for sharing. This is the Daily Connect podcast. One final story before we go, and this one is for the audiobook fans out there. A new book is out. You might have heard about it on Read On with Red on Friday on air, but it's a new book which has been made available today in the RNIB Talking Books Library, and it's called The Rules of Seeing. It's written by Joe Heap. Now, the book tells the story of Gillian Safanova, known as Nova to her friends. Now, Nova can do many things. She can speak five languages, she can always find a silver lining, and she can even tell when someone is lying just from the sound of their voice. But there's one thing that Nova can't do. She can't see. And when her brother convinces her to have an operation that will restore her sight, Nova wakes up to a world she no longer understands. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? Well, let's now hear the words of the author in the letter he wrote to accompany the book when he first sent it out in the hope of finding a publisher.
There were several inspirations for writing The Rules of Seeing, but one thing stands out above them all. Halfway through work on the book, I became a father for the first time. Sam arrived in the early hours of a frosty February morning, and from the beginning it seemed that he was trying to take in everything around him. Of course, I knew he could barely see a handspan beyond his face, not to mention the fact that everything would still be upside down. Nevertheless, he looked with a sense of urgency, watery blue eyes wide to the world. Through the months that followed, the highs and lows of sleepless nights and developmental milestones, I couldn't help but try to see the world as Sam was seeing it. In some ways, it was frustrating. Here I was, writing about a character learning to see for the first time, while living in the same room as someone who was doing it for real, who couldn't tell me anything. But often his curiosity spoke for itself. Watching Sam track an aeroplane as it crossed the sky and disappeared into a cloud, I realised that he had no idea that some solid-looking objects were not solid at all. watching his fascination at his own legs through a few inches of soapy bath water, I realised how confusing the concept of transparency must be to him. Why are some things see-through, some opaque, some reflective? I watched him as he saw fire for the first time, and the ocean, and falling snow. There are several cases of people who have lived blind for much of their adult lives, only for an operation to restore some of their vision. They are remarkable stories, but watching Sam, I was constantly reminded that this is a stage we all go through at least once. It's just that very few of us remember what it was like. The Rules of Seeing is, in part, a book about the things we take for granted, or fail to see through overfamiliarity. Sometimes life shocks us out of that trance, and we stand, looking with the same urgency as the day we were born, eyes wide to the world, and really see.
Author Joe Heap talking about how he came to write the new book. It's available from today in RNIB's Talking Books Library in audio, large print and braille. The book is the subject of our upcoming episode of The Book Group hosted by Robert Kirkwood, and here's some of that conversation that took place after our readers had a chance to read the book for themselves.
If you have got some sight, even if it's a small amount of sight, that enough to recognise something, it is very odd if you've never been able to see it before. You look at something and you think, what on earth is that? And then when you pick it up, it's obvious.
But it must be the kind of link between your brain and your eyes that needs to grow. I've not forgotten what things look like, though. I've been registered blind for 8 years now, and I can still remember what things very clearly, because I had like some, well, not brilliant sight, but I had some sight for most of my life. So don't think I will ever forget, but I think if you've never known, it would be difficult to...
Some of the things that they were saying in the book, I just didn't understand at all, where maybe my experience is different. I have an image in my brain as to, you know, what things look like, and I couldn't say to you if I could see what they would look like, of course, not having had that experience, but having smaller models of things. I mean, maybe a cathedral, I have felt models of cathedrals where I've gone, you know, touristy things, and they show me what they look like. That's useful, because nobody can feel all 400 feet of architecture. Something every day, like a car or something, I found certain things strange in that book, but perhaps that's some people's experience.
Our readers in the book group talking about the new book, The Rules of Seeing by Joe Heap, which is now available in RNIB's Talking Books Library in audio, large print and braille. My copy is on its way and I cannot wait. We're back on here tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. till 12. Join me for that if you can. If not, check out the podcast right here on the RNIB Connect feed just after 5 o'clock. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Daily Connect Podcast.